Today's shir, today's the yurt site of my father-in-law, which is Moshe Chaim ben Matisyahu, ben Yamin. And it's also, one of the students here asks for the yurt site of their grandfather, Yaakov ben Moshe, Shetieh Ilui Nishmotehim. As you see the topic, it says, Dat Moshe v'Yehudit, which apparently some of you figured out, was I was going to talk about hair covering. I don't know how you figure that out from the topic. This is Marion's fault again. Indirectly. Indirectly. It's that once someone saw last time that I gave a class on what she wanted, so then they made a request that I talk about hair covering. They'd also been asking for the beginning of the year, and I decided this would be very wise to do, like, right before the end, when you won't see me. So that's what I can... so I can leave afterwards. Excuse me? You know where I live. So, there are really two topics... There are really two topics which are related to one another. How closely they're related is a very good question. And most of the articles that I read that people wrote about this, and that's what I did in the last 24 hours, is I printed up lots of articles and I read them through after I had prepared, and the articles tend to just completely confuse the two different topics together. On the other hand, most of the Rishonim that I saw don't confuse them. So what we're going to do is we're going to do one topic this week, and we're going to do a different topic next week, but the topics are interrelated, and let me try to define what the two topics are. This week, we're going to learn a Mishnah in Masechet Ketuvot. The topic of the Mishnah is, under what situations a woman will forfeit her Ketuvah, which means all of you are familiar with the term malpractice, right? You can have malpractice, which, by the way, is a topic that we could study next year if you want. There is malpractice within halakha. There are sources on it. But there's malpractice in terms of doctors, and there's malpractice in terms of lawyers, and there's malpractice in terms of all kinds of people come to your home and overcharge you and do work. Now, what about malpractice in terms of a spouse, which means a ketuvah is some kind of a contract? Could there be any kind of situation where a woman forfeits the ketuvah which was given to her at the time of her marriage? So the Mishnah tells us, yes. There are all kinds of... Meaning, generally, how does the woman get the ketuvah? One of two situations. Either by divorce or by the death of the husband, then the ketuvah is already written, it's an obligation, it's an financial obligation, which precedes almost any other financial obligation which exists, and the woman would get the ketuvah. But is there a situation of forfeiting the ketuvah? So the Mishnah then tells yes. Now before I read the Mishnah, I'm going to first tell you what the other topic that we're not doing today. The other topic is a Gemara in Brachot that says, Sa'ar b'isha erva, that women's hair is considered to be erva. I don't know how to translate erva. I don't know if erva should be translated as something which is erotic or something which is sensual or something which is forbidden. We'll get there. Now, there is obviously going to be a whole discussion on what the implication of an unmarried woman's hair is, but we'll see within this list of one of the things which are considered malpractice is to go out with her hair uncovered. So you can now think that those are the same topic. They're not the same topic. Because in each one of these things, we're going to have to try to investigate what the status of this law is, why is there this law, what are the parameters of it, and when does it apply, and perhaps when does it not apply. And also, obviously, one of the things that will come up is to what extent is change, social change, or fashion change, going to affect, and that's going to be discussed in each one of those topics, but again, I'm stressing that they're not necessarily the same topic. So if I can even put this a little bit differently, this Mishnah is about a woman's obligation and as a married woman. Let's just state it at that. The other Gemara is about a man's orientation to woman's uncovered hair, which is a completely different topic, as I hope you see. In the Shulchan Aruch, they're written in two different places. One, not surprisingly, will be in Evin HaEvan, Ezer. Eben Ezer is the place of the Shulchan Aruch that deals with all kinds of things about marriage, including all the laws of the Ketuvah, all the laws of marriage, are in Eben Ezer. On the other hand, in Aruch Chaim, it talks about the laws of prayer. One of the laws of prayer is going to be, can a man pray if a woman's hair is uncovered or other body parts are uncovered? So that's what I'm saying, is that not only are these two different Gemaras, they're going to end up in the Shulchan Aruch in two different places. And again, I'm going to say, yes, there is some interaction between the two, but to what extent there should be interaction between the two, that we're going to try to see as we get to next week and not this week. Okay? Is that clear enough? And again, it is very surprising to me, just the ease that some of these people writing these articles just flow from one to the other without even noticing that these things are not necessarily the same topic. Okay. So, let's read the Mishnah now. I just blamed you for the class. That's all that I said so far.
I'm really sorry. I'm missing a bunch
of
questions. I asked for it.
Not just you. Not the only one. Okay. The Mishnah is in Ketuvot. What is Ketuvot about? The Ketuvah, and that should not be a hard one. Over here it says as follows, Ve'elu yotzot shelo b'ketuvah. These are the women that go out without a Ketuvah. Now, one of the things that the Rishonim are going to deal with, does this mean it's the husband's option? If he wants to divorce her, he does, but she just loses financially, she loses the Ketuvah. Or does this mean, in these cases, the husband is obligated to divorce his wife? Actually, there's another Gemara which is called Gittin. At the end of Gittin, there are situations where it talks about where there's an obligation for divorce. So over here, it actually didn't say, let me say it clearer. Here the topic is not divorce. Here the topic is losing the Ketuvah. But as you can now already tell from this, there will be different opinions on that, whether there's an obligation or not. What are the cases? Well, first the Gemara gives a headline, and it says, Ha'overet al dat Moshe. Somebody who breaks Dat Moshe. This is a very interesting term, and we can guess what it means, but it's not a very popular term in terms of Mishnah and Gemara. It says somebody who goes against the Dat Moshe. Dat Moshe would be the religion of Moshe. Okay, that sounds pretty basic. Sorry. Over a Dat Moshe v'Yehudit. Somebody goes against Dat Moshe v'Yehudit. Now, are those two things or one thing? We'll see in a second. They're two things. Why? Ezehi Dat Moshe. What's considered to be the religion of Moshe? Ma'achilato she'enu mu'usar. So, certainly when we lived in an agricultural society, as we do today, there were laws in the land of Israel in terms of taking ma'aser. If the wife, when she prepares food, she just doesn't bother taking ma'aser. So here, she is directly causing him to sin by feeding him food. Now, again, the extension of this would be giving food which is not kosher. Right, not necessarily. Over here, it's really saying that she's feeding him non-kosher food. She's in the kitchen, she's preparing food, and it's not kosher. So what's this Mishnah now telling us? Therefore, one of the obligations of the wife is not to mislead her husband and to cause him to sin in terms of non-kosher food. Next, umisham shato nida, which means that the woman has relations with him and doesn't bother telling him that she hadn't gone to mikvah, that she is in the status of a nida. So, again, both of these cases are considered to be malpractice in terms of the wife's obligations. And therefore, the husband finds out about this. He's outraged, and he wants to divorce her for this. So what does the Mishnah say here? Well, in this case, it's not just that they had a fight. In this case, she didn't live up to her obligations, which means if you want to get into a fight, there are certain things you can do. There are certain things which are allowed. But this is not playing fair. These things causing him to sin is already going to be a reason to forfeit the ketuvah. Okay? And as I said, all this, till this point, is basic. The lo katsa lo chala. So now you know, again, these are one of the three things that women specifically have mitzvah, challah. So what does she do? She makes nice challah for Shabbat, but she never separated challah. So she gives them food without separating challah from the bread. So again, now you can ask me why I say this and why I say that. Don't ask me. V'noderet ve'enu mekayemet. She makes vows and doesn't keep them. And now the Mishnah goes on in the other direction. Ve'ezui dat Yehudit. Now, also what we would love to know is what exactly is the difference between Dat Moshe and Dat Yehudit. So let's just call this right now as follows. Dat Moshe would seem to be the law which was handed down from Moshe, while Dat Yehudit would be Jewish practice. Dat Yehudit would be Jewish practice, the practice of Jewish women even. Dat Yehudit would be the practice of Jewish women. Here the Mishnah says, Yotza v'rosha parua. She goes out with her hair. Now, the big problem will be here, what does the word parua mean? And that's something which we cannot necessarily answer you. But what it says is that she goes out with her hair parua. Parua could mean wild. It could be uncovered. But we'll try to understand soon. Vitava bashuk, also a woman who, how do you say tava in English? Spins, like, you're weaving. So what's the problem of weaving outside? It's weaving in public. The problem is that as she's in public and as she's lifting up her arms, so parts of her body which should be covered will become uncovered, which means that weaving itself is wonderful, as I think in Eshet Chayil even it's said to be wonderful, but that should be done in a place which is private or a place that you keep your privates private. And over here it's saying, no, somebody's going out and doing this in public, so therefore, again, she will become uncovered. Umidaberitim kol adam. She goes and talks with everyone. Abba Shaul omer afa mikalelet yiladav bifanav. Someone who curses the children of the husband in front of him. Rabbi Tarfon omer af hakolanit. A woman who makes a lot of noise. Ve'ezu hi hakolanit. Lekishehi midaberet betoch beita ushchena shomim kola. She's... The Gemara, by the way, will limit this in terms of talk which is taking place, or a more intimate type of talk which is heard, or complaining which is going on. But as I said, the main thing that we're concerned with now is this thing covering hair. So we're skipping the first part of the Gemara. Rashi tells us in source 2, what is dat yudit? Shenagu b'no Yisrael va'af agav delo ketiva. This is Jewish practice, even though it does not have scriptural basis. Jewish practice, even though it's not written in the Torah. That's dat yehudit. So all these other things, meaning we see a difference between the first things and the second things. The first part of the list, which was dat Moshe, were all kinds of things where she's causing him to break law. The other things are things which are considered to be inappropriate, for lack of any better term. You would say these are things which lack tzniut, even though you could debate with me some of the specifics over here, but we're not in a debating mood, so we will not debate. The Gemara now comes back and says, the Ezri dat Yehudit, and it's quoting the Mishnah, and it says, Yotza v'rosh parua. She goes out with her hair, parua, whatever that means. The Gemara says, hold it a second. Why are you calling this dat Yehudit and not dat Moshe? Rosha parua d'oraitahi. The Gemara says, no. Going out with one's hair parua is a Torah law. This is not just a custom of Jewish women. So why would you call it that? Dichtiv, and it quotes a source. Upara et rosh ha'isha. Now, within the context of this Mishnah, that's a pretty good verse. But let's think about the limitations of the verse and the strength of the verse. The limitations of this is, what doesn't it say? It's not what you would call a command, a tzivoy, a mitzvah. And God said to Moshe, saying, speak to the children of Israel, especially the female ones, and tell them not to go outside with their hair uncovered. Which means, if it said that, then all of you would say, well, that's, you know, obviously that's a mitzvah. Now, one second. Now, think about what Rashi said, how he described dat yehudit. He said, it's a Jewish custom, even though it's not written. Now, what happens when something is written, even though it was not necessarily written as a tzivoy? Now, where is it written? Again, the words of the Mishnah are, she goes out with her hair uncovered. Over here, we're told that one of the things that the Kohen does to the woman who's suspected of infidelity, the woman who is a sotah and goes through the process of the sotah, what does it say? It uses the same words, the same word of the Mishnah. Upara. And by the way, part of the question over here will then be, what is the pshat, what is the meaning of that verse by sotah? What exactly is done to the sotah, which there is a difference of opinion right over there, and therefore, how closely is the whatever is done to sotah going to be related to whatever this law is? Or is this just going to be a relationship in a more general sense, and the Gemara is saying? The fact that the Torah says, when the woman who is suspected of being of being mizanev, of a woman who is a sotah, right, the sotah itself, is somebody who's suspected, right? So it's not you're suspected of being a sotah. A woman who is a sotah is suspected of something. So the woman meaning, is this really the same law? Or the fact that by Sotar we're told that her hair is uncovered, so what does that tell you? That the Torah is telling us that normal practice was for women to have covered hair. Over here, it's quite possible that the Gemara is not telling us that this is a mitzvah in the sense that God said this is a commandment, but this is a practice which we find from the time of the Torah, which would therefore put it within the realm of Dat Moshe. I'm going to actually give you three possibilities here at least right now. One possibility is the fact that not everything in the Torah... Okay, let me restate that. There's a game which is called counting the 613 mitzvot. How do we know we have 613 mitzvot? Well, there's a Gemara at the very end of Masechet Makot. We're told we have 613 mitzvot. So now what do all the people who count the mitzvot do? They count to 613. How do they count? Each one of them counts differently. You look in the Rambam, you'll find the Rambam argues with them. And you found the Smag, you'll find the Smak, you'll find the Sefer Yerayim, you'll find all of them count the mitzvot differently. Why? Because sometimes it makes a difference and sometimes it doesn't make such a difference what exactly is counted a mitzvah. They would agree that these things are obligations, but not all obligations have to be an independent mitzvah. And by the way, now let me contradict everything I said in the first 5 minutes. It could be that because of the other issue of a woman's hair being considered something which is erva or erotic, therefore she has to cover the hair. And it could be that that's already on the status of a Torah law, and therefore this is just evidence that was in fact the case. This is one of the things that they practice. But again, I want to give you a couple different possibilities. One, this is a mitzvah, even though it never said in the Torah, thou shalt, so on. Right? You don't need a thou shalt for it to be a mitzvah. Second possibility, it's not a mitzvah as such, but it is Jewish practice, which has a scriptural basis by virtue of the fact being written in the Torah. Third possibility is that it's not a mitzvah, and the whole thing is just what you would call an asmachta. There are the best way to translate the word asmachta would be, it's somech on something, it's relying on something, but in English it would be an anchor. Which means there's occasional times in the Gemara where it will tell you, oh, this law is based on this verse, but the Rishonim, or sometimes the Gemara itself will say, it's not really based on that verse, it's just in order to remember it, or in order to understand it, or in order to take it seriously. But the truth is, it's drabanan, which means there are various rabbinic laws that the Gemara will quote a verse for, even though the Gemara doesn't necessarily consider that verse to be authoritative in terms of this particular law. So over here, we have a couple of different possibilities. Although the Gemara continues, and Rabbi Shmuel seems to take this quite seriously, he says, Upara et Rosh Ha'isha, V'tana debe Rabbi Yishmael, it was taught in the Beit Midrash Rabbi Yishmael, Azhara, now the word Azhara means, this is the law, this is the warning, this means that this is going to be, this is the basis, the scriptural basis, for a law, Azhara levno Yisrael shlo yitzu b'parua Rosh, that Jewish women cannot go outside with their hair uncovered. Now, there is a profound problem in this quote. Did any of you catch it? Okay, I'll help you. The quote doesn't say anything about married women. It just says Jewish women. Which? No, he's saying this teaches that Jewish women cover their hair. And meaning, if it would have said Nashot Yisrael even, you would have felt a little bit better. But what does it say? Benot Yisrael. You know what? I told you I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to do it for a second anyway. The other Gemara that tells us that Sarvi Isha Erva, that women's hair is considered to be, again, sensual, erotic, whatever. So I would think if that's the case, then at which point, at the age of 12, and what does it make a difference then if she's married or she's not married? I think we would have a very hard time justifying the difference between other covered parts of the body between a woman who's married and not married. So why should that make any difference whatsoever? So I'm saying The question then of is this referring only to married women or not will be one of the issues which crosses the line between both of the sources. And I can assure you, as Naomi said, that there are sources that tell us that single women did cover their hair. And now the question is what you do with those sources, but then on the other hand they can say, well, it says, look what it says. Jewish women cover their hair. So Jewish women is from the age of 12. right? By every bat mitzvah, we say, now you're a Jewish woman. So you're a Jewish woman. Now you have all the obligations. Now, part of what's going to be interesting along the way will be, am I misreading this? Which is possible, and maybe it only means married women, and that's the context over here, and that was the situation of Sotah, and that's the discussion over here. And the discussion over here in the Gemara is clearly only talking about losing the Tuvah, not talking about other situations, even though this part is cut and pasted from the Sifri, which is the Midrash Halacha on Sefer Bamidbar, and that source, it's Sifra, sorry, and that source itself sounds a little bit broader. But as I said, that's an open question over here. The Gemara continues, Amar of Asi, Amar of Yochanan. Now, what's he going to try to do? He is going to try to answer the question. What question do we have? The question that we have is, the Mishnah listed covering the hair as Dat Yehudit. The Gemara asked on that, it's not Dat Yehudit. It should be Dat Moshe. It is written in the Torah. So now, he's going to answer it as follows. Amar Rav Yossi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Kalta Ein Ba Mishum Perur Rosh. Once a woman has a kalta on her head, then she's no longer guilty of Perur Rosh. Now, what is the one problem that I have right now? Now, I have another word I don't know what it means. The first word I didn't know what it means was Parua. The second word I don't know what it means is Kalta. Rashi's definition of Kalta, which is in line with the Aruch, Rashi's in source 5 right now, Kalta, Sal, Sheyeshlo, Milamata, Beit Kibul, Laholamo, Birosh, or Beit Kibul, Milamala, Tate Popelachu Pishtan. So think of your Arab women neighbors carrying something on their head. He says it's a basket, which is made in the form of a head. You think that your hats are bad. And on top of this would be a place to put other things that they can carry things. So therefore, he's saying if you have something on your head, so now, for the moment, let me translate parua as uncovered. If you are walking around with something on your head, you are fulfilling Dat Moshe because your hair is now not parua. Your hair, what? So part of now part of the question is now what happens to that hair, that those flowing locks. What did the Gemara just now say? And again, our problem right here is, what does parua mean and what does kalta mean? So if we'll go with Rashi. Rashi tells us that she's carrying something on her head, which therefore her head is not uncovered. Now, let me just make a statement right now, so we can have a little bit of equality, like 2 minutes of equality. In terms of a male wearing a kippah, is the idea of a kippah that his head should not be uncovered, or is the idea of a kippah that his head should be covered? By the way, guess what? There's two different sources in two different places. Right. In terms of the Shulchan Aruch, there's two different sources in two different places. On the one hand, it says that a person should not go arba armot, walk a minimal amount without something on their head. But there it says you can't walk arba mod begilui rosh, with one's head uncovered. In the laws of prayer, there it talks about praying with your head covered. So now the question is your head uncovered and your head covered the same thing? Which means it could be that a something of a minimal size will now mean that your head is not uncovered. And as far as walking with your head uncovered, no, a very small kippah would be fine. But as far as prayer goes, where it says that your head needs to be covered, so it's very possible that then you need a proper cover. And that could even be most of the head, right? Because, again, what makes something covered or uncovered? To make it covered, it could be that you need most of the head, and therefore there is, you're not asking me this question, but I think that there's a very strong possibility that, you know, it's funny. It's only the people that wear the big kippot who end up putting on the hats afterwards. But if they already have a big kippah, they don't need to have the hat on. But the ones with a really small kippah, they may need to have something bigger in order to say brachot, in order to pray. The idea of some people, the idea of the hat is based upon another source, which we're not going to get into. So the Gemara now reconciled this, or began to reconcile it, and said, Rav Yochanan said that if a woman has something on her head is no longer uncovered. And now I am translating the word perua as uncovered. So if she has something on her head's not uncovered. So therefore, as far as keeping the Torah law, or keeping the Dat Moshe, to be more precise, if you have a basket on your head, then you're not breaking Dat Moshe. It continues and it says, Havi Barabzera Hecha. Rabzera asked a question. Where are we talking about? Ilema Bashuk. Are we talking about a woman walking around outside in a marketplace? Dat Yehuditi? Is that only going to be a situation of Dat Yehudit? The Ela B'chatzer, or are we talking about a chatzer? Now, also, one of the last word that we're going to have a hard time translating today is a chatzer. What exactly is a chatzer? So I said, but let's call a chatzer right now, let's call it, we'll call it a courtyard. Can we wait? Ve'ela b'chatzer, imkein, lo hinachta bat la'avram avinu sheyoshevet tachet ba'ala. If you are going to say that this is even within the chatzer, you will now have created a situation that not one Jewish woman would be able to remain married to her husband. And by the way, from this line, the implication is that there would be an obligation of divorcing in this case, because basically you're saying is that you're destroying every Jewish marriage. He says, what are you talking about? So it says, Amar Abaye, Vitamer of Kana, Mechatzer lechatzer v'derech mavoi. Now, let me explain the resolution of the Gemara and what we have, and maybe also what we don't have. The Gemara understands that there's two things. One is Dat Moshe and one is Dat Yudit. Dat Moshe means that a woman should not go out with her hair uncovered. That's Dat Moshe. Dat Yehudit, which is what the Mishnah was talking about, says Yotzav Rosha Parua. So it says, hold it, but which one is this? So it explains as follows. There is completely uncovered. And even, but now the problem we're going to have is that it uses the word perua over here on both sides. Or there is something which is still considered to be perua, which goes to what you were saying. You can have something on your head, but there's still hair coming out, which is considered to be wild. The Gemara just now came to a resolution and said that this idea of dat yehudit means going out in public, which means dat yehudit is for a Jewish woman to go out in public in the way that Jewish women go out in public. I hope that wasn't circular, because everyone can say, I'm a Jewish woman and this is how I go out. So apparently there is a larger societal concern built into this definition, and therefore it says that there is, on the one hand, a Torah law, a woman can't go with her hair uncovered, but in order for it not to be uncovered, if she even had a basket on her head with hair coming out, her hair is not uncovered, but in order for the hair to be covered, how should it be covered? It should be covered in the way that Jewish women cover their hair. That's what the Gemara concludes. Now, it goes a little bit more specific, because where are we talking about? What does it mean going out? So are we talking about the alleyway or the courtyard right out adjacent to the house? The Gemara says, no, that's not what we're talking about. The problem over here of breaking sensibility of Jewish or the sensibility of how Jewish women dress is talking about going out in public. And it also goes over here and it says, no, from a chatzer to chatzer, even through an alleyway, which means you have, in terms of public area, you would have a public shuk. That's public. That's a Rashut HaRabin. You would also have a courtyard adjacent to the house. You would have another courtyard adjacent to the next house, and you could even have an alley between the two. Over here, this Gemara is saying that, no, going against Dat Yehudit, not, by the way, not Dat Moshe, going against Dat Yehudit would mean to go out to the Rashut HaRabim, to the Shuk. Because, again, what did the Gemara say? If we're talking about even just the alleyway, or just the courtyard, so then you will end up causing a situation that every Jewish woman would end up having to be divorced because of it. Perhaps. Let's look at Rashi and see what else we get from Rashi here. Rashi, source 4, which we really spoke outside before. Do you write to Hiva Milo Kari Dat Moshe? If it's from a Torah law, why are we calling it Dat Moshe? Why are we not calling it Dat Moshe? Azhara. Remember Rabbi Yishmael had said in his Beit Midrash, it was taught that a woman who, that from this verse of Parah, it's Rosh Isha, we learn that's an Azhara. What does it mean, the Azhara? Midavdin and lahachi l'nivala, that by the sota that we do this in order to disgrace her, midak and neged midak, amosha astad lahat, anot al ba'ala, miklal da asur. Inami midichtivu Parah, miklal da husha'ata, lav prua, hava, shma mina, in derech b'no Israel, let's say prua rosh, v'chein ikar. He gives two interpretations. The second one is that the fact that you have to uncover means that normally it is covered, and that's the proper interpretation. Kaltawi read. Im Kain, a couple lines down. Debechatzah yesh ba mishum priya. V'derech mavui delo shchichi rabim. So that's important. When Rashi is talking about the courtyard and the alley, why should one be lenient over there? He says because a lot of people aren't there. Now, what does he mean by a lot of people aren't there? Does that mean that no one is there? Or does that mean that, it's just not a reshut harabim? Which means, what exactly is the nature of this law? We finished the Gemara, and I don't know how much better off we are now than when we started, other than seeing that there's a whole bunch of questions here. Is this a Torah law? Is this not a Torah law? Is this a custom? It's not a custom. What is the custom? What are the parameters? Does it mean you have to divorce? You can divorce? Which means all kinds of questions come up over here, and therefore, in such cases, what are we going to have to do? We're going to have to go to the Rishonim. Now, a couple of things that should be quite clear. What's the conclusion of the Gemara? Is a woman? Let me put it this way. Would you say, based on this Gemara, that a woman is obligated? I'm going to go from the extreme right now. When she's in her home and no one's around, that she's obligated to keep her hair covered. Based on this Gemara, what would you say?
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't seem to be that much of a question in terms of home. Again, I'm not even talking about other people being home right now. I'm saying when she's home and no one's there. If she's home and other people are there, then you can start arguing about things. But over here, if she's home and no one's there, what would we just now learn? That she can even walk out into her backyard. And the Gemara said that, you know, pretty clearly, that she can walk in the backyard. The question will be among the Rishonim, when it said he can walk into the backyard, what are we talking about? Are we talking about Dat Yehudit, or are we talking about Dat Moshe? Because it could be that in terms of Dat Moshe, she can't walk outside at all. It could be that in terms of Dat Yehudit, that's what we're talking about as far as the alley, which mean or the courtyard, which means this thing about the kalta, what situation was that being suggested? Is that a suggestion for her walking outside with her laundry on her head, and we're only talking about housework, and therefore only a kalta is enough? Or what we were talking about is in the courtyard that without anything. Now, that wasn't clear from the Gemara, and you will have a very hard time determining what the Gemara really meant. Because the Gemara, is it talking about Dat Yehudit, which it seems to be, but now what was the flip side of it? When it said that it's okay in the courtyard, does that mean it's okay you don't need Dat Yehudit? That Dat Yehudit is Jewish women go out in public this way, but as far as the Torah law goes, then at least a kalta would be necessary. So I'm saying, here's where the bigger practical questions are going to end up coming at. Any question?
Regarding any other kind of quote-unquote ervah that we're talking about.
I told you, we're not talking about ervah today.
But there's no other discussion of this sort of thing with anything else.
How do you know? Just to bother you a little bit, the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai, as you can see from his picture, was an Orthodox rabbi. Not only was he an Orthodox rabbi, he was the major posek for Sfaradim before Rav Avadya Yosef started his revolution. Rav Avadya's revolution was to get back to the Beit Yosef, to Rav Yosef Karo. And his argument was that Rav Yosef Karo was the Rav of Eretz Yisrael, so we should be all following Rav Yosef Karo. What about Jews who don't live in Eretz Yisrael? We should still follow Rav Yosef Karo. I mean, that's really what Rav Avadya did. Before Rav Avadya came around, the Ben Ish Chai was really the most authoritative among the Sfaradi poskim. So again, I'm not quoting 150 years ago. I'm not quoting somebody who is of no significance, of somebody who has no stature. This is really for next week, but I knew that somebody was going to bother me. Isha shemenika et bina umigale dadeha. A woman who is nursing, and while she's nursing, she bears her breasts. Asur lekrot olavarech kenegda. You're not allowed to make brachot, and you're not allowed to, again, this goes to the other topic, you're not allowed to make brachot and pray in front of. Afilu hi ishto, even if you're married. V'kol shekein b'isha acheret, and certainly by another woman. But then he continues, v'yesh omrim, and some say, dekeven ta'isha darka lagalot adeh bizman ha'yinika, that it's normal for women to bear their breasts when they are nursing, that during a time when a woman's lactating, her breasts are considered to be like her hands and face and part of the public scenery. And only when a woman's not nursing, only when a woman's not nursing will she be careful to cover up her breasts. And then you're not allowed to learn or make a bracha, or say shema in front of her. And you can rely on this when necessary. One second. Is that remarkable? Okay. So now don't say that no one ever said such a thing. Let's continue. And all kinds of Sardic poskim will have this as their precedent. I have another one over here, and there are, we'll because... I told you, this is next week's topic, if you want. But I'm saying, this is a remarkable thing, because we all know that that if a woman were to do such a thing, religious fanatics, quote-unquote, would be the first ones to scream, it's not Sneed, it's Erev, it's this and this. And here, as I said, the Ben Ish Chai comes out and writes that Yesh Makom L'smoch. He goes, no, that's not considered to be an Erva. It's a baby which is eating. Like, what's the matter with you? This is a normal thing. And again, we have to be careful sometimes, because when we are the products of America and England and even Canada, we are the products of a very puritanical society that has certain attitudes to certain things. And on the other hand, in the Middle East, there were different attitudes to certain things. And he's coming and he's saying, is that, no, Yesh Makom, right, to rely on this. Yes.
You're making the distinction between, let's say, the Anglo-Saxon, puritanical, or whatever you want to call it, and so on. I was wondering if this kind of distinction is basically that the Sephardic poskim in many things are much more, quotes, lenient than, quotes, the Ashkenazi, whether it's Pesach or whether it's this or that, or is that a generalization that you would not accept?
I've heard this before, and they are more lenient in the things they're more lenient, which is all the things except for the things they're stricter about.
Would you like to give a percentage on that?
I can't. There was somebody who lived in our neighborhood years ago who would always say, him and his wife, they're both Ashkenazim, but no, we will only go to a Sephardi posek because they're more lenient, which I just found very funny. But of course, all the things the Sephardim was strict on, that they didn't go to. on laws of kashrut, in terms of Beit Yosef and stuff, I mean, they're stricter in terms of what's considered kosher. What? Yeah. They're much stricter in terms of what is kosher, in terms of the Beit Yosef's Shechita. I think it's an unfair generalization. There are certain things that are more lenient, certain things. But also, part of the whole issue is going to be is what is real Ashkenaz halacha, and when did we go crazy? So that's also going to be part of the issue. Yeah, I read that. I skipped that. Sorry, Daraita Kalta Shapra Dami, on a Torah law, the Kalta is enough. Dat Yehudit Afidu Kalta Nami Asur. But as far as Dat Yehudit goes, then the Kalta is not enough. Right, then that, okay, I thought I explained that many times. I may not have read it. No. You're right, the Doraita is more makel. The Torah law is not to go with the hair uncovered, and therefore the kalta is enough, the hair is covered. But dat yehudit, then you need more. Now, what that more is that you need, we don't necessarily know yet. He has a whole book, by the way, the same author, the Ben Ish Chai, called Chukei Hanashim. And he does talk about hair covering. I'll see if I have the opportunity to get back. He even speaks about the women in Europe and how they dress. And he praises them. What? Okay. Okay. So to this point, everything is perfectly confused. Source 6, the Ruch et Chaim, which is one of the Rishonim on Mitzot, Katav Arimi Korbil Zal, Mitzvata Se Legaresha Isha B'Sefer, that means a get, Kedichiv Kimatzaba Ervat Davar, V'Katav La Sefer Kritut V'Natan Biyada. There's certain times that if one gets divorced, certain times one needs to get divorced, and he says, what's the Torah itself say? Ervat Davar. Ervat Davar Kigon Overet Al Dat Moshe. What is Ervat Davar? Now this is interesting. Because I could have said, based on the Mishnah and Gittin, I could have said that Ervat Davar is only by infidelity. Ervat Davar, that when one finds infidelity, in that case, there would be an obligation to get a divorce. And I could say that, and I would say that. But he now says, but even Overa Dat Moshe. And he continues all the things that we saw in the Mishnah. V'chein Overa Dat Yehudit. So he says, he's understanding that this is an obligation to get divorced if the woman's hair is uncovered, even if she only has the kalta and she goes into a public area. Because why she broke Dat Yehudit, which means even breaking Dat Yehudit, he's considering to be an extension of Ervat Davar, which, by the way, could mean, I don't know if this will disturb you that much, it could be that he's saying, what is Ervat Davar? The first jump is Ervat Davar does not mean only infidelity. It means inappropriate behavior. Now, what is inappropriate behavior? What is considered to be inappropriate behavior? That's based upon how Jewish women behave. Now, I hope all of you are going to appreciate now that we're having a hard time defining what exactly Dat Yehudit is. And does it change? And does it change becomes now a wonderful question. How, you know, does it go in one direction, can it go in the other direction? Good.
Based on regular
society,
based on today's
right.
Based on
correct. The Rush, Rabbeinu Usher, one of the great poskim, writes, Dat Yehudit Yotzei Rosh Perua, Rosh Perua Deraita, Dichtiv Perua Et Rosh Isha. So it's important, he understands that Rosh Perua is Deraita. He says it clearly over here. I'll show you in a minute where he contradicts himself, but we'll reconcile it. Here he says it's deraita. V'tanit be'er b'yishmol, asar levot v'not yisor, shle yitzei b'friyat rosh, amar v'yehuda amashmol, deraita b'kalta, shaper dami dat yudit, afilu b'kalta nami asar. So, again, and that was just about a direct word-for-word quote from the Gemara. You notice the three dots over there, which we'll see in a moment. Three dots are a commentary on the Rush in Source 8, V'hayinu b'rusha tarabim uv'chatzer lo havei afilu dat yudit afilu b'lo kalta, which now he just now gave us the opposite approach. What did he just tell us? That if she goes out in public in the shuk with just a kalta, it's a problem. What does she need? The kalta and whatever dat yudit requires. But what does it say over here? Haynu b'rusha tarabim uv'chatzer lo havei afilu dat yehudit afilu b'lo kalta. What does he say? Well, by the chatzer, he understood the Gemara. She doesn't need anything on her head. Which means he's understanding that the chatzer itself needs no covering whatsoever. That's the opinion of the Hagot Ashiri. Again, whether apartment buildings should have Ramah Shiyach is a separate problem. It's a problem regarding Shabbat, regarding Erev, regarding Hanukkah, regarding all kinds of things. Is it or should have Ramah Shiyach? But it would apply most likely to somebody's socially. It could be. It's still considered to be Rishud Haram. I'm not sure about an apartment building yet. Yeah. I don't read it, but it's very often read to me. Yeah. That was read to me.
So one of the letters quoted Rav Mashash Shukha, who had said that it used to be going out of the half covered hair women was the Bar Erva and Zulkin.
Okay. okay, hold on.
But nowadays,
right, 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 right. Hold on to that. Rabbi Mashash from Haifa was—he did say this. He's one of a couple of people that went. Again, I wasn't sure if to go that far. His own nephew, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, Rabbi Mashash, severely argued with him in that. But I'll get to that as well if you like. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. The Rambam writes, "Ve'ezu hidat Yehudit." No, before I get there, source 9, the Tosfot Rosh is on Gittin. Here the Gemara in Gittin is talking about cases when one is obligated to divorce, to get divorced, and he asks, "Im kein ken yotzev roshah perua nami chovah legarsha devarat al dat Yehudit." Right, and I'm just going to get to his answer. He goes, "Vayesh lomu dahata midrabanan v'halchem midaraita," which means that if a woman is cheating, then from a Torah law, they have to get divorced. But if she's just not following that Yehudit, so then that's a different level obligation. Which means we do see that there are different. Which means even though the Rush believed that he just called this Doraita. What did he call Doraita before? He says Rosh Parua is Doraita, but that Yehudit would be Drabanan, and somebody who breaks that Yehudit, or even breaks that Moshe, it's breaking the Torah law, but there's no Torah law to get divorced. That would seem to be the way to reconcile his two opinions over here. And again, I've seen people quote these things just without really being careful about what the context is that he's saying it. Regarding the situation of a woman going without her hair covered at all, the Rush understands he's breaking the Torah law. Regarding the obligation to get divorced for that he says is on a rabbinic level. Why that's on a rabbinic level, you'd have to ask him, but we can surmise why that would be the case. The Rush said that, the one who really said that was the Taz. I don't believe anybody before the Taz. What? No, the Taz is much, much later. Not the Torah, the Taz. Of David Alevi. The Rambam writes in source number 10, "Ve'ezu dat Yehudit to minagat sniut shanagu b'no Yisrael," which again is circular. He says, "What is this? This is the way that Jewish women behave." Ve'elim drim she'imasta echad mehim avra dat Yehudit yitzal l'shuk olam avui mefulash rosha perua. So therefore, he thinks that she can't go out to just a shuk with her hair uncovered. This goes against the note we just now saw on the Rush. Ve'ein aleha radid kechol hanashim. So he is explaining kalta as radid, which is a kerchief. He says the minimum from the Torah is a kerchief. She has a kerchief, but she doesn't have the whole proper getup. He describes it a little bit more. What? No. I'll explain that also. Right, and you can read the rest of the Rambam, and we'll explain some of the other things that we saw in the Mishnah. Being that I want to get through this topic today, so we're going to, as is our normal practice, skip a lot. Let me read first a Gemara, which may or may not have anything to do with anything. He says Radid over here is a biblical term. He says, "Tsaif milashon hakatuv hatsnifot vaharididim." Okay. Source number 14 is a Gemara, which may or may not have anything to do with this. The Gemara is telling us that once upon a time, there was a woman who had two different sons who became a Kohen Gadol in one day. One was supposed to be the Kohen Gadol, the other one, one became defiled, and the other one became Kohen Gadol, and they were both Kohen Gadol in one day. And then it goes on to tell us, not only did she have two, let's go to the top of page 5, the end of the first line, the end of the top line, V'ra'ata iman shnei kohenim gadolim b'yom echad. Tanur Rabbanan, it was for the Torah, taught, Shiva banim hayola l'kimchit, that's her name, V'kulan shamshu b'kuna gadola. And all of them became Kohen Gadol, Amrlo Chachamim, obviously in her lifetime. By the way, if six of them died and the seventh one became, that would not be considered to be a wonderful thing. So presumably they were Kohen Gadol and for one reason or another, disqualified. Amrlo Chachamim, ma asit shezachit lakach, amra lahem miyamai lara'u karot beiti kil'e sa'ari. In my life, the walls of my house never saw, what does kil'e sa'ari mean? The braids of my hair. Amrula harbeya sukain velo ilu. They said a lot of people tried that, and it didn't work. The Tosfot Yishonim over here writes kalei sa'ari, the braids of my hair bisha'a shahaita yichola lichsotan. In times that she was allowed to uncover them if she wanted to. It's very clear from the Rishonim over here that the fact that she did this and she's saying, this is what I did, that it's not normative law. The fact that it's not normative, you don't have that source, the fact that it's not normative law, we already know because this wasn't even hinted at in terms of our Gemara. The Gemara that we learned, what did it say? It said that even in the Chatzer, now again, there was a question mark in the Chatzer, but the walls of the house, certainly if no one's around, it didn't seem to be any reason to be machmir, and this would be very surprising. If what she did is normative law, then why would she be bragging? It's not, okay, what's special? So the way that the story is told over here makes it sound like this is not the letter of the law, quite the opposite, far beyond the letter of the law. Yeah. Who is? The Gemara?
Yeah.
No, the Gemara says a lot of people tried that, it didn't work. Not everybody who had Sneod had seven sons. They are accepting it. They're just saying it didn't work for everybody. It's not a contradiction. Now the question is always going to be, when you get a source like this, to what extent should this be law? I want to read one more source. What's the matter? Let me read one more source, which I'll just tell you what it says, source 15. Those of you who love the authenticity of the original can look at the Aramaic. We'll look at the first line in the English. It's the Zohar. The Zohar writes, of Chizkiah further stated, cursed be the man who allows his wife to let the hair of her head be seen. This is one of the rules of modesty in the house. This is one of the rules of modesty in the house. A woman who exposes her hair for self-adornment brings poverty in her house or renders children of no account in their generation and causes an evil spirit to abide in her house. If this is so, when the woman does this in the house, how much worse is it when in the open road, and ever so more so does all this result from another kind of shamelessness, and you can keep on going over here. Here you have a source, it says on the bottom, four lines at the bottom, it brings a curse on the husband, it causes poverty, it causes something besides to happen to their household, it causes inferiority of her children, may the merciful do, and so on and so forth. Here you have a very clear, albeit mystical source, which tells us about how severe one's hair uncovered can ever be. Question over here is, like, people may not be keeping the halacha. What the value or the strength of the Zohar is in terms of halacha is not so simple. The Chtam Sofer in source 16. Now realize about the Chtam Sofer that even though he's born in Germany, in Frankfurt, he makes his way to Hungary and becomes the most important posek in Hungary, and the most Hungarian posek in Hungary, even though he wasn't really Hungarian. But whatever you know about Hungarian practice, the Chtam Sofer has a lot to do with it. He writes, "Amnam b'tshuvah maram alashkar tzavach hashoal aminhag neshotein be'eretz Yishmael shiotzotan is su'ot b'shura achad shel se'ar bein ha'ozen b'dachat taluyla." That there are women who are going out, their hair covered with a little hair sticking out. And he goes and he quotes the truth that people scream about this. He goes, where we live, we follow the Zohar. Even though, by the way, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't. Shulchan Aruch basically rules the way that we've already seen. I don't know if... Beit Yosef is in source 12, where it's underlined. He writes, "Near midvarav behedi shiyotzot lechatzer pruat tarosh mamash It seems to be that a woman can go outside with her hair uncovered, completely talking about the chatzer. And he questions people who understand that any differently. As I said, the Shulchan Aruch seems to not know about this idea of kimchit and not to know about this idea of the Zohar. And the Chtam Sofer says, Mikol Makom, around the 10th line, Kevin Shetafsu Aminho Kizohar, the custom is like the Zohar. Alzekatov Marishtein, Minhag Oker Halacha. The minhag goes against the halacha, because he knows the halacha is not like this. And he writes, "V'naseh halacha kavod, ha'inu hechad v'sifri chitzonim cholkim al hashas, v'sifri chitzonim ha'inu mesechet sofer, mekadomim u'midrash u'psika hazor, kol echad mehem, oto minhag okar halacha v'naseh halacha revachat b'Yisrael." He says that, what do you do when you have a contradiction between the Zohar and the Gemara? Okay, I'm going to ask you that question. What do you do when you have a contradiction between the Zohar and the Gemara? What's the halacha? It's like the Gemara. So he says, but if Jewish practice follows the Zohar, so then we follow the Zohar. Okay, this is not such a simple point, and it could be we can have a whole class on this, what happens when Kabbalistic things go against halacha. He continues and he concludes, Haklali yotzei kol Shum se'ar b'shum makom b'roshu padachet b'nisuot afilu b'chedra ervahi im lo sheyesh lemitpachet b'rosha u'v'shuk v'chatzer sh'rabim gam kova. So he ends up, you need to cover the hair inside with at least a mitpachet, outside with a mitpachet and a hat, and if you're worried where that came from, here the Chatam Sofer. Even though he will admit that when one studies the Gemara, when studies the Shulchan Aruch, when it comes to the conclusion, that's not really the halacha, so he allowed the Zohar to flip it around. It's a double covering. And it could be, you can understand from the Gemara, it could be, you can understand, that you need something like a kalta, and the Rambam would go in this way as well, and that's why you need the kerchief, but on top of that, you need something else. As I said, that is not represented within the Shulchan Aruch itself. The Shulchan Aruch, even though very often the Torah follows the language of the Rambam, in this case he followed the language of his father, who is the Rush. Source 17 is just for your own interest. It is the end of a very, very long Kedarko B'Kodesh, Tshuva of Rav Ovadia, screaming about wigs, saying that they're absolutely not allowed, and that any quotes, if you want to look for a whole list of all the people who said they're not allowed or were never allowed, and how can we be lenient on this, Rav Ovadia says this over here, and he says any place that doesn't have a custom should certainly not allow it. The biggest person, if you want to know who attacks wigs, it's many, many people. The fact that in the quote-unquote yeshiva world today they allowed wigs, you should just know that that is incredible leniency, and it goes against the sensibility of most of the poskim, including the Vilna Gaon, including, again, many, many others. There is a source for it, the Shilta Giborim, who not only allows wigs, he even allows wigs of your own hair. He says that a wig is fine. Once it's not connected, it is fine. But the predominant opinion among the poskim was that it's not allowed. That's what Rav Ovadia talks about over here. And he says a woman needs to cover her hair, but and he absolutely attacks the wearing of wigs. The biggest proponent for wigs today would be followers of Lubavitch, because apparently the Rebbe felt two things. One is that a wig will cover all the hair, and he is influenced by the Zohar, many Hasidim are influenced by the Kabbalistic sources. And secondly, he felt that psychologically, a woman who wears a beautiful wig will feel good about the way that she looks and is more likely to keep her hair covered than somebody who doesn't like the way that she looks and will uncover hair. So because of those two reasons, he told people they must wear wigs, and then you have like all the other poskim saying that they're absolutely forbidden. And when the big thing a couple of years ago with the wigs made out of human hair from India, so and a lot of this came up at that point, but you had, again, those saying, whoever allowed wigs in the first place, what are we talking about? And even if they did allow wigs 200 years ago that looked worse than your grandmother's broom, that is not necessarily should allow the wigs today that look better than Farrah Fawcett looked in her heyday. So, source 18, the Sridei Eish, has a wonderful long tshuva on this we cut it. He does quote an opinion that I wanted you to see, and it is a very lenient opinion. It is the Shvut Yaakov, who, again, I can assure you, was a very nice Orthodox rabbi. And the Shvut Yaakov says that we misunderstood from the beginning what kalta is, and we misunderstood what para is, and he claims that it's a braid. It's a braid. Everything is a braid. He says that the Torah law is that a woman can't go out with her hair wild, but if it's braided, then she's already keeping the Torah law. That is the Shvut Yaakov. That's what the Sri Eish, to be honest, rips it apart and says that the Yerushalmi certainly disproves that. But he says that the Torah law is that a woman should go with her Rosh Parua. What is Parua? It means wild. So what is the opposite of wild? Is braided. And some of the sources backed by Sota say that it says there that they should make her hair Parua and undo the braid. That is brought down in some of the primary sources. So therefore he understands. Right, right. So, and that's the reason, and exactly, and that's the reason you'll see in Geula a lot of the girls walking around with their hair in braids, because then they'll say, oh, no, that's what the Torah law is. The Torah law is for a Jewish woman's hair not to be wild. If you put a clip in, it should be, and anyway, I'm not. The Shvut Yaakov is a very interesting approach. It is clearly going to be a lenient approach. But he has some interesting things to say, this Rida Esh, when he attacks it. Almost everyone from the beginning understood this talk of married women, because that's the context of the Gemara and Ketuvot. As I said, the other issue, right? If you look at the right before source 19, the Sri Deyesh gives some mussar about Jewish women and modesty. Lo bati leverekan et im yesh din zeh shel kisoy sarot rosha shel ha'isha. I'm reading at the right before source 19, the last paragraph on top of page 7. Lo bati leverekan im yesh din zeh shel kisoy sarot rosha shel ha'isha nusa din Torah mufurash minhag Torah. He says, you know what, I'm not going to bother. I didn't come here to try to really figure out, is it a din Torah or minhag Torah? Which, by the way, is a very sharp line once we considered what exactly the status of Dat Moshe is, especially regarding Peru Rosh. He said, Lamasa soverani shegam mitzad hamusar hayudi ra'ui sheyisha nisua techaseh rosha. And anybody who wants to read this, he goes and gives a point, which maybe all of you have been explained before you got married. Someone said, but this is the reason. But he's telling you, this is my own personal thoughts about it. You can read that on your own time. Source 19, he quotes the Shilte Giborim, who allows the wig. You see that now in front of you. Source 20, this is what we had to get to. Rav Moshe Feinstein. Here he's asked, at which point is a woman considered to be dressing like a shameless hussy? Those were not the exact words. No, I've been waiting all year to use that. Those were not his exact words, but that's what he's answering. He writes, Ach yesh isur achar b'nashim midin dat Yehudit shelo l'naheg b'pritzut. What is dat Yehudit? He finally gives us, again, a sharp definition. A woman should not dress in a way which is one of pritzut. What is pritzut?
Wanton.
What is she? Okay. Aval mitzad zeh, hu rak kishehi atzma osekach. He goes, but derech pritzut is when she's the only one acting that way. Aval kishederech kol anashim bi'ira, if all the women in her city dress that way. Ain't shayach lechashev zeh lepritzut. Which means he just now gave us a wonderful definition of dat Yehudit. What is dat Yehudit? Dat Yehudit goes down to the way that society defines something. And therefore he says, Ve'ein chaluk mashin hazaderech anashim shebi'ir, hu mishum pritzut. You can't say that everyone is doing pritzut. Dal kol panim kevin she keinu derech levishatan volchan, ein lechashev zeh lemaseh pritzut, elasor aleihem, el miderech hatzidut, letzniut yitera, and the ones who do more, tovo aleh bracha. Okay, it's nice that they should do more. Now, based upon this, and afterwards, Rav Moshe has a longer tshuva directly dealing with covering hair, and he admits in the beginning he didn't want to answer this, he didn't want to write about this. He says in the beginning, it's enough that I tell people privately that they can be matir. He deals with the Chatam Sofer, finally saying at the end, he was a great man, anybody want to follow him, wonderful, but it's not halacha, which means covering the hair all the time inside the house and so on. So Rav Moshe then does. And he also says something very important at the end, which will lead us over to next week's topic. He writes at the very, very end, four lines from the bottom, which you're not going to understand exactly. Ava pashut she'ela ratzot lakel b'shnei adinim. And certainly those who want to be lenient in both laws, ein la'chishivan la'ovrot al dat yudid chas v'shalom, because you don't know exactly what he's talking about, but it's inside the house, and so on. Ve'ein limana afilu l'tamad chacham v'yira shamayim, milisa isha kazu. Someone who doesn't want to follow the chatam sofer, he goes, you can certainly marry such a woman. This is a chumrah. This is not normative halacha. Im hi yirat shamayim adekib mitzvot, u'balot midot. If she's a nice woman, and she keeps Jewish law, and she has good midot, so then marry such a woman. This has nothing to do with what real halacha is. This is a chumrah. Aval hu rak erech shnei etzpaot begova shepanim hu erech orech shnei tfachim v'yeh b'tziruf pachot mitefach v'yoter asura, which he is the source that says that it can only, that the amount of hair that can be open could be two fingers worth across the head. Now I'm going to explain. Next time we'll start with this and to understand why he said this. But before that, I want to get to a very clear conclusion for today, including some sources that were somewhat radical. One of the you quoted Rav Mashash, and there are others as well. Here's the conclusion. Torah law, a woman shouldn't go with her hair uncovered. Minimal opinion we saw about that was a braid. There's Dat Yehudit, which says, this is how women cover their hair, and that becomes normative, whatever is the practice of Jewish women. Of course, the wonderful question is going to be, what happens when the normative way that religious women, who keep Tarat Mishpacha, and keep Kashrut, and keep all the things that we saw in the beginning of the Mishnah, they keep all of those things, but they don't cover their hair. You know, Rav Moshe already told us, I can't call those women Pritzot, so now, could that override Dat Moshe as well? So what I will say, personally, my understanding, and I'm going to quote people that are more lenient, but I will personally say that I understand the sugya that a woman has to cover her hair. How she covers her hair should be based upon what is done in that particular society. And what that society is can be very, very different if you live on one side of town or if you live on the other side of town. So therefore, if somebody lives in the middle of Geula, arguably, it's going to be one way. If somebody lives in a different area, it could be something else. So the way that I understand the sugya, and I'll say it again, is that to uncover the hair completely is going against Dat Moshe, and therefore that's incorrect. But how it's done would be based upon where you live. If you live in Teaneck, New Jersey, and the women who cover their hair wear a baseball hat and a ponytail comes out, you know what? If it's a ponytail which is tied up, so then you already have who to rely on, that it's already considered to be Dat Moshe. More than that, the hair is not uncovered. It's no worse than the kalta. More than that, they're covering it the way that other women cover it. That then becomes acceptable. If those of you who wear hats and hair comes down afterwards, if that's the way that religious women wear their hair, that becomes fine. You're doing Dat Moshe because the hair is not uncovered. You're following Dat Yehudit because that's the way that women cover their hair. As far as not covering their hair at all, that's a little bit harder to justify. Anybody who wants to look online for a fascinating article about this, the article is called Another Example of Minhag America. You put those words in Google, you will find an article. It's written by Professor Mark Shapiro, who is obviously very smart and loves to bother people. Of Minhag America. He starts out his article, Mark Shapiro. You write the words, Another Example of Minhag America, you will find the article. He starts off by quoting the conservative psak that you don't need a mechitza. Why do you need a mechitza? Minhag mevatel halacha. Right? We saw the Chatam Sofer said that. The Chatam Sofer said it to be much stricter than the Gemara, but the conservative movement said, no, this is our customs. Our customs break halacha. Now, what that line really means, and it's taken from the Gemara, we're not dealing with right now. So he said, you know what? In the Orthodox Jewish communities, we have another example where minhag has gone against halacha. The minhag of Jewish women is not to cover their hair. And then he quotes a very interesting rav who wrote a book called the Yad HaLevi. He was a rabbi his name was Rabbi Isaac S. Horovitz, who was born in Nevardik in 1868, had smicha from Yitzchak Elchanan. He wrote a book called Yad HaLevi. He died in 1935, and he was the rabbi of Hartford, Connecticut. He is anti-reform. He is orthodox. He is a Talmud Chacham, and he has a fascinating tshuva about covering the hair. And he says, it is not possible that the good women that I see in my neighborhood, who are religious, who keep Shabbat, who keep kosher, who keep Tara Mishpacha, and so on, and don't cover their hair, it can't be they're breaking law. He says it can't be. Now, by the way, what would someone else say? They are breaking the law. They are. But he then writes a tshuva justifying them, and he wants to argue that Dat Yehudit can then override Dat Moshe. And if the custom of Jewish women is not to cover their hair, so then that becomes their custom. Now, the Ben Ish Chai in this book, Chukei Nashim, I'm just going to read this and we'll stop with this today, he writes a whole thing about Levush. Yeah. V'chein nashim yishmorchem harachum, may God have mercy on you. Hatzniut ma'od nechutza li'isha, mikol atzadim, mibefnim uvachutz, which is interesting, because no one ever talks about tzniut also being something internal and gets so focused on external. Ofen ma'bushev ofata tzricha li'ot misuderet, al ha'minagim ha'nechutzim. Because women should look nice, misuderet. He writes, Asur la lasot shum dugma v'tzorat levush ha'shegaleh mashu mi'besara. She shouldn't let flesh be revealed. Ke isha asur la'shegaleh davar migufa. Rak paneha, tzavareh, v'kapot yodeh. Her face, her neck, and her hands. And as you saw in his other book, he writes, and if she's nursing, other things also. Ushar avareha kulam atufim. The rest of her body should be covered. V'hibitu hanashim l'anshei Europa. Look at the women of Europe. Minagam lo le'sater mipnei zarim. They don't go hiding behind. I mean, which means they're forward, they meet strangers. Uvachol zot mabushei misudarim. They look proper. They look put together. And they don't reveal their bodies. Rak paneim v'tzavaram, their face and their necks. Kapot yudeim v'rosham, and their heads. V'nachon shesara meguleh. And it's true that European women, again, not so recently, walked around with their hair uncovered. Lofi adin shelanu asura davar. You know, as far as we're concerned, this is not allowed. Aval yesh lam eza hit natzlut, because they must have some reason why they can allow it. Kiyamrim lo nitashev minagaze eitzel kol nishoteim bimnotu matam v'chutz l'matam naseh gilui asar k'mo gilui pneim v'chapot yudeim. That, where they live, this became acceptable. And being that it became acceptable, he's using them as an example of proper tzniut, even though he's mentioning along the way, oh yeah, and by the way, they don't cover their hair, but look how wonderful and tzniut these women are, and well put together, and nice and good, and they should be our example, even though they go one thing in a way that we don't understand and we don't follow. So I'm saying that it's a fascinating line, because again, when you realize the significance, the stature of the Ben Ish Chai. I apologize for going over, but we will continue next week to the other part of it. A whole new sources next week.